We are in Genesis 31 this morning. Last week we were in the chapter prior to that, and we worked through that narrative, and we found that in verses 25 and 26, we saw Jacob asking Laban that he would return to the south, the promised land, Beersheba, to Isaac's land. And Laban convinces Jacob to stay in verses 27 and 28. And we mentioned that the words of Laban are that of a worldly person still, because that conversation, the transaction that he wanted to do with Jacob, was strictly that of business for him, for Laban's advantage. And so Jacob recalled his years with Laban in verses 29 and 30 of chapter 30. But eventually Jacob relented and decided to stay with Laban yet for another 6 years, verses 31 through 33. Jacob made a proposal to Laban that he would get the wages that came out of the flock of sheep and the flocks of goat from Laban. And what an amazing proposal it was, because Jacob wanted only the brown sheep out of the predominantly white sheep of Laban. And Jacob wanted the speckled and spotted goats out of the predominantly black goats. Jacob apparently had some knowledge of the Mendelian science method, or the Mendelian knowledge, where there is recessive traits that can come out of the predominant traits of animals. Nonetheless, his main thrust was that he would trust God in all of this. Laban only saw what was advantageous for him, and so he agreed with that proposal. And to further put evidence on his deceitful ways, Laban then separates the speckled and spotted goats and the brown sheep and gave it to his sons. And so, you know, the narrative there, and we emphasize that the point of the narrative of chapter 30 is to show that such blessing did not come from Laban, nor did it come from Jacob's scientific methodologies and or superstitious belief. Rather, all that blessing was a gift from God. As Abraham had rejected the offer of wealth from the king of Sodom in chapter 14, so now Jacob refused to take anything from Laban. And so chapter 30 ends with the narration of Jacob's increasing wealth. He had more brown sheep than the white sheep of Laban. He had more spotted and speckled goats than Laban's black goats. And so he added to that maidservants, both male and female, and camels to help in that industry, as well as donkeys. And Jacob's wealth tremendously increased in that chapter. So now we come to chapter 31 of Genesis. This is probably one of the longest narratives that you'll see in Genesis. So we're going to read it, and you know the reason for that is not to insult your intelligence, but so that the narrator here can be heard, and we don't want to neglect the primary speaker in this conversation. And who is the primary speaker of the conversation? The Holy Spirit of God, and these are His words. So follow along with me, beginning in verse 1. We've done this before, so follow along, beginning in verse 1. And he heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. And the Lord said unto Jacob, Return unto the land of thy fathers, and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee. And Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flock, and said unto them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not toward me as before, but the God of my father hath been with me. And ye know that with all my power I have served your father, and your father hath deceived me, and changed my wages 10 times, but God suffered him not to hurt me. If he said thus, the speckled shall be thy wages, then all the cattle bear speckled. And if he said thus, the ringstraked shall be thy hire, then bear all the cattle ringstraked. Thus God hath taken away the cattle of your father, and given them to me. And it came to pass at the time that the cattle conceived, that I lifted up mine eyes, and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the cattle were ring-straked, speckled, and gristled. And the angel of God spake unto me in a dream, saying, Jacob, and I said, Here am I. And he said, Lift up now thine eyes, and see all the rams which leap upon the cattle are ring-straked, speckled, and gristled. For I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee. I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillar, and where thou vowest a vow unto me. Now arise, get thee out from this land, and return unto the land of thy kindred. And Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him, Is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not counted of him strangers? For he hath sold us, and hath quite devoured also our money. For all the riches which God hath taken from our father, that is ours, and our children's. Now then, they told Jacob, whatsoever God hath said unto thee, do. Then Jacob rose up and set his sons and his wives upon camels, and he carried away all his cattle and all his goods which he had gotten, the cattle of his getting, which he had gotten in Paddan Aram, for to go to Isaac his father in the land of Canaan. And Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. And Jacob stole away unawares to Laban the Syrian, in that he told him not that he fled. So he fled with all that he had, and he rose up and passed over the river and set his face toward Mount Gilead. And it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob was fled, and he took his brethren with him and pursued after him 7 days' journey, and they overtook him in the Mount Gilead. And God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said unto him, Take heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. And Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mount, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the Mount of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, What hast thou done that thou hast stolen away unawares to me and carried away my daughters as captives taken with the sword? Wherefore didst thou flee away secretly and steal away from me, and didst not tell me that I might have sent thee away with mirth and with songs and with tabret and with harp? And hast not suffered me to kiss my sons and my daughters, thou hast now done foolishly in so doing. It is in the power of my hand to do you hurt, but the God of your father spoke unto me yesternight, saying, take thou heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. And now, though thou wouldest needs be gone, because thou sore longest after thy father's house, yet wherefore hast thou stolen my gods? And Jacob answered and said to Laban, because I was afraid, for I said, peradventure thou wouldest take by force thy daughters from me. With whomsoever thou findest thy gods, let him not live. Before our brethren discern thou what is thine with me, and take it to thee. For Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them. And Laban went into Jacob's tent, and into Leah's tent, and into the two maidservants' tents, but he found them not. Then went he out of Leah's tent and entered into Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the images and put them in the camel's furniture and sat upon them. And Laban searched all the tent, but found them not. And she said to her father, let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise up before thee, for the custom of women is upon me. And he searched, but found not the images. And Jacob was wroth and chode with Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, what is my trespass? What is my sin that thou hast so hotly pursued after me? Whereas thou hast searched all my stuff, what hast thou found of all thy household stuff? Set it here before my brethren and thy brethren, that they may judge betwixt us both. This 20 years have I been with thee. Thy ewes and thy she-goats have not cast their young, and the rams of thy flock have I not eaten. That which was torn of beasts I brought not unto thee. I bear the loss of it. Of my hand didst thou require it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus I was. In the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from mine eyes. Thus have I been 20 years in thy house. I served thee 14 years for thy two daughters, and 6 years for thy cattle, and thou hast changed my wages 10 times. Except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely thou hadst sent me away now empty. God hath seen mine affliction and the labor of my hands, and rebuked thee yesternight. And Laban answered and said unto Jacob, these daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and these cattle are my cattle. And all that thou seest is mine. And what can I do this day unto these my daughters, or unto their children which they have borne? Now therefore come thou, let us make a covenant, I and thou, and let it be for a witness between me and thee. And Jacob took a stone and set it up for a pillar. And Jacob said unto his brethren, gather stones. And they took stones and made an heap, and they did eat there upon the heap. And Laban called it Jegar Sahadutha, but Jacob called it Galeed. And Laban said, this heap is a witness between me and thee this day. Therefore was the name of it called Galeed and Mizpah. For he said, the Lord watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another. If thou shalt afflict my daughters, or if thou shalt take other wives beside my daughters, no man is with us. See, God is witness betwixt me and thee. And Laban said to Jacob, behold this heap, and behold this pillar which I have cast betwixt me and thee. This heap be witness, and this pillar be witness, that I will not pass over this heap to thee, and that thou shalt not pass over this heap and this pillar unto me for harm. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor and the God of their father judge betwixt us. And Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered sacrifice upon the mount and called his brethren to eat bread. And they did eat bread and tarried all night in the mount. And early in the morning Laban rose up and kissed his sons and his daughters and blessed them. And Laban departed and returned unto his place.
thus far, the reading of God's word. May he bless it in our hearing this morning. All right. So we start this chapter with the call of God for Jacob to return. You'll find that in verses 1 through 16. The diligent man, Jacob, the industrious man, Jacob, increased in wealth and possessions exceedingly. How? God had blessed him, simply put. The writer of Proverbs says, "The Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish." The Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish, but he casteth away the substance of the wicked. What an appropriate proverb for Laban and Jacob. The writer of Proverbs goes on to say, "He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich." Jacob was industrious and God richly blessed him. But we see immediately that the interpretation of the gossipers and the slanderers in the gossip and slander of the sons of Laban was contrary to that proverb. Why? Because they attributed Jacob's wealth to ill-gotten thievery. And you know, this is often the storyline of thieves and crooks themselves. When you're a conniving, deceitful individual, that's the first accusation you'll give to somebody who's made it. That's the first accusation you'll give to somebody who's made it without looking at the solid facts. What's worse is that his uncle, Laban, believed his sons, believed them, and changed his demeanor even more negatively towards Jacob. Renowned commentator Matthew Henry said this, quote, "Envy is a sin that often appears in the countenance." Hence we read of an evil eye in Proverbs 23:6. Sour looks may do a great deal towards the ruin of peace and love in a family, and the making of those uneasy of whose comfort we ought to be tender. Laban's angry countenance lost him the greatest blessing his family ever had, and justly. If you remember that it was because of Jacob that Laban's wealth increased. It was through the channel of blessings of Jacob that Laban increased. But should Jacob have fought this battle? He wasn't about to die on this molehill. Besides, the Lord had bidden him to return unto the land of his fathers. You will recall that 20 years had elapsed. He wanted to see his folks again. And so Jacob made a plan to steal away stealthily from Laban. He wasn't about to barter and bargain with one whom he had known to be a deceitful individual. So he devised a plan with his wives. We see that his wives, no doubt, saw the past 20 years of their lives as clearly as Jacob saw it, agreed with Jacob. Verses 14 through 16 shed some yet interesting things about their most dysfunctional family. Number one, we find that Laban, their daddy, was not only unkind to them, but also unjust to them. Why? Because daddy sold them to Jacob, but he didn't give them any gifts from the sales. What am I talking about? I'm talking about the dowry that was given to Laban from Jacob.
Laban wasted everything away. Daddy was so adamant, get this, he was so adamant about abiding by their customs and tradition, about marrying off the firstborn of the family first. But he was silent about the other half of that custom. And what was the other half of that custom? That portions of the dowry, or the entire dowry, was to be shared or given to the bride. Isn't it interesting that there are people who are so adamant about customs and traditions only for their advantage? But when it comes to the other side of customs and traditions that would not benefit them, they're quiet about it. Another interesting detail about this is that we find that Laban, their daddy, treated them like he treated strangers. Not part of the traditional family. They were like business pawns to him. That was one of the reasons they agreed and complied with Jacob's plan to steal away stealthily, to leave Laban, not telling him of the plan. Perhaps this is the bigger reason that they've, because they have seen in the life of Jacob and how diligent he was and how industrious he was, and that how God had greatly blessed Jacob, and they said to him, "Whatsoever God hath said unto thee, do." This is a very significant language because this is a language of trust. This is a language of trust. In other words, they were putting their lives in the hands of God. Their children's lives in the hands of God. This was the language of their own auntie, Rebecca, mother-in-law auntie, something like that, right? Remember when Rebecca, she said about the proposal of the groom she'd never seen through the mighty elder servant of Abraham, Eliezer, in Genesis 24. They asked her, her dad and brother Laban, "Wilt thou go with this man?" And she said, "I will go." That was remarkable language of trust. Trust in the messenger of God. Trust in the words of the messenger of Abraham. And this was the language of Ruth. Remember Ruth? Ruth said to Naomi, Naomi tells her daughter-in-law, "Please stay, just like your sister-in-law is staying in Moab." But Ruth said to Naomi, "Entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me." This was the language of trust, trusting in the Lord, trusting in the words of the Lord, trusting in the promises of God. And so this brings us to the second act of this narrative, which is the departure of Jacob from Laban. The departure of Jacob from Laban, or the land of Haran, verses 17 through 24. Can you see now? Jacob, Leah, Rachel, all their sons, maidservants, on camels, the flock of brown sheep, and the flocks of spotted and speckled goats, and then some donkeys. This caravan, this convoy, going, getting out of Haran. Two details that are important to the act of the narrative we are told here. Number one, verse 19. What happened there in verse 19? Rachel stole the images that were her father's in her father's household, in her father's house. What were they? They were called teraphims. They were household gods. And you can picture them in your mind that they were small in size, because later on you find out that Rachel was able to sit on them, cover it with the camel's saddle, and she sits on the saddle, covering the entire thing with her tunic or whatever she had then. These were small things. These were small idols. These were little figurines that her father kept in his house. And Rachel did this when Laban was away shearing his sheep. Other commentators said that they were images of Laban's ancestors, to whom they inquire about the future or to divine the will of the gods. That this was what was practiced in that region. They would say, have an image of their ancestor there, and they would talk to this little figurine and divine what the will of God is in the future. I grew up in a Catholic home, in a Catholic culture, Catholic background, and I've seen their religious statues being moved from one place to another. And they would offer food to it and ask questions from it and so on and so forth. And I am aware that this just not happens in Catholic cultures, but it also happens in the Hindu or the Buddhist cultures as well, Confucianism, Taoism, and so on and so forth. And so this was a very ancient practice, polytheistic, superstitious, and all of that. Now, some theologians say that there were gods for different things in the household and livelihood. For example, let me quote Phillips here, what he said about this portion. So these were little figurines, small gods, small statuettes. He said there would be a Baal, or an idol, of the oil press to ensure that his vats were filled with oil. And then they would have another idol of the olive press. A marvelous little god, a god who could produce oil of olive to be eaten with bread, or to be used for cooking, or to be rubbed into one's aching limbs. There would be another Baal, or there would be another god, to ensure that the oil and wine would remain sweet and good. And then you would have another figurine for what? For the highways, and of the beehives, and of the barley and wheat. And without them, Laban believed the fertility of his fields and cattle would be gone.
That was his superstitious belief about those little household gods. And so he was furious when he found out that they were gone. Now, others say that they were made out of clay. But I think they were likely made of precious metals. That was why I think Rachel took them. Okay, follow my logic here. And that was why Laban wanted them back very badly. Why did Rachel take them? Why do you think Rachel took? Why did Rachel take them? Yes. Yes. We know from their conversation and their complaint against their father who cheated them out of their bridal dowries. This was payback. Interestingly, as a point of similarity in how, listen to this, in how the younger Jacob acquired his blessings from his father, this younger Rachel stole these household gods from her father. Maybe because she wanted to sell them for money or for some equivalent wealth. Another detail that we find interesting here, verse 24, God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and told him essentially, you better not touch or hurt Jacob. This was further evidence that God wanted Jacob to return to Canaan. This was further evidence of God's will for Jacob and nothing that Laban could do to thwart God's will. Which brings us to the third act here in this narrative, the pursuit of Laban, verses 25 through 35. And so Laban, when he finished his shearing of the sheep, went home and found out that his household gods were missing. He then employed some of his servants to look for it and found out also that Jacob was missing in action as well. So he put two and two together and concluded that Jacob stole the household goods. And so Laban started on this hot pursuit and then caught up with Jacob on the seventh day at Mount Gilead. Three details in overtaking Jacob. Number one, Laban said that it was foolish for Jacob to do such as he did. But let me turn the question around to Laban. Who was foolish? Who was the fool? Who was the fool to waste away the bridal gifts? Who was the fool to cheat Jacob of his wages? 10 times. Who was the fool to put his trust on idols who couldn't even defend themselves from being stolen? Who was the fool? Obviously, the answer to that rhetorical questions is that Laban was the fool. Number two, Laban said that he had the power to hurt Jacob. What kind of a father-in-law is that? What kind of an uncle is that? What kind of a relative is that? This just shows us how ugly this Laban was. You see in the narrative that he apparently staged an attack against Jacob. But God stopped him in a means of a dream. And then thirdly, Laban wrongly accused Jacob of stealing his idols. And Jacob had no idea what was going on. Jacob had no idea that the one who stole these household goods, household gods, was his favorite wife. And so, then we observe the details of Rachel's trickery as well. Get this, Laban was now face to face with his own skullduggery. He was a trickster, wasn't he?
and he had reared and raised a trickster as well in his own image, in the face of Rachel, his younger daughter. Which brings us to the fourth act in the narrative. You see here in verses 36 through 42, the righteous indignation of Jacob. Let me ask you this. How would you have responded to this? If you were in Jacob's sandals, how would you have handled this? Any thoughts on that? Any suggestions for Jacob? How should he have handled this? Probably the same exact way. After working for this slave taskmaster for 20 years. I mean, you see the patience of Jacob here for all of those years. What is my trespass? What is my sin that thou hast so hotly pursued after me? I labored for you. I labored under you. You are a hard taskmaster. In the 20 years I have worked for you, I've never eaten from any of your flocks. The ones which were torn by lions and coyotes, I took the loss. Even the ones which were stolen by bandits, I replaced them with my flock and goats. During the day's scorching heat, I labored long hours. Even during the night's piercing cold and frost, I labored still. I lost many a sleep during those 20 years working for you. You could probably see his brow wrinkled now, his hair gray because of all those stress and hard labor, hard work. Jacob aging so fast in those 20 years that he worked under Laban. In the words of a Bible translator, this was my lot for 20 years in your house. I worked like a slave for you, 14 years for your two daughters, and 6 years for your flocks, but you changed my wages 10 times. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, the God whom Isaac fears, had not been with me, you would certainly have sent me away empty-handed. But God saw I was oppressed, saw how I was oppressed under you and how hard I worked, and he rebuked you yesterday night. And so with that kind of logical argumentation, Laban relented of his deceitful device to take one more advantage of Jacob. And brings us to the fifth and final act of this narrative, the covenant between Laban and Jacob, verses 43 through 55. Laban called the covenant Jegar Sahadutha. I like saying that word because it's just rolls off your tongue just like that, right? Can you say that 10 times? All right. Well, it simply means this pillar is a witness. This pile of stones is a witness. That's kind of an odd custom for us to see, for us to know. I mean, there were other people there for sure, you know, Laban's sons and Laban's soldiers and Laban's servants, as well as Jacob's maidservants, both male and female. I mean, they could have just, I'm sure they were there too, witnessing this, but they had to have this more concrete, steady thing to put on and leave in that place. And that's, they use that as a witness, a solid piece of evidence that they have made this promise or agreement or contract or
covenant one between the other. And Jacob called it Galeed. It's the same thing. Simply means this pile of stones or pillar is a witness. And what was the covenant? What was their agreement? It was also called Mizpah. So we have three names here now. But Mizpah has a little bit more distinctive definition to it for the fact that God saw everything, even when Jacob would be far apart from Laban. And the agreement came with two negative aspects. The agreement came with two negative aspects. Number one, Laban says, "Don't you ever hurt or bring harm to my daughters and my grandchildren. I may not see it, but God, your God does." And number two, "Don't you ever pass the stone of boundary into my territory. And I also will never pass the stone of boundary into your territory, Jacob." All right. Now, years ago, I know of a young Christian girl gave this to somebody. You can see that the words written there are the words we find in this narrative, which was basically, let me see what verse was that says about the covenant between Laban and Jacob. Verse 49, "And Mizpah, for he said, 'The Lord watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another.'" And of course, when people got a hold of that verse, they think immediately that it has some lovely sentimental value to it. They mean to tell that God was watching them even though they were apart, and that God might bring them back together again soon. Right? I mean, you go online and find these pendants, and they're all over the place. Young couples buy them, give one piece and the other to the other, and use it as a sentimental thing. What is the moral of the story here? You don't take a text out of its context. That's just a simple illustration of how people can take a pretext from the scripture and use it out of context. And the first part of that was okay, but the second part, you look at the context of it, this was all negative. It was not a lovely sentimentality of coming back together once they were apart. Jacob says, "Don't pass this heap. You pass this heap, something's going to happen to you." Laban says the same thing. "Do not pass this heap and go into my territory, or I will hurt you." All right? There are millions of these sold in the marketplace.